Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Curzon Film Podcast. I'm Jake Cunningham and joining me this week is Campbell A. Campbell of Little White Lies, Crack Magazine and One Room with a View. How you doing?
Hello, I'm pretty good. Thanks. Enjoying the latest soda burgers.
The soda burgers. Good, 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 good. Well, stop listening because it's all downhill from here. That's the peak of the podcast. It's been a good one. Make sure to follow us on Twitter. See you next time.
Right, we're done.
Yep. And also joining us is Steph Watts from Film 4 and One Room with a View as well. How you doing, Steph?
Hello, I'm good.
Yeah, we're excited to get back into another retired burger. It's amazing how a man can retire and yet continually crank out two TV shows and two films.
Yeah, just seems to be just knocking them out in his spare time. It's a hobby now.
Yeah, putting us absolutely all to shame. This is Steven Soderbergh's Unsane, which follows Sawyer Valentini, who relocates from Boston to Pennsylvania to escape from the man who's been stalking her for the last 2 years. While consulting with her therapist, Valentini unwittingly signs for a voluntary 24-hour commitment into the Highland Creek Behavioural Centre. Now, the trailer and poster for this film, I might say, were interesting. We don't want to say it looked like a student film edited on iMovie, but that was definitely the perception.
I think that might have been, the perception when we saw the trailers come out. Obviously shot on iPhones, kind of doesn't exactly look like the most beautiful film on earth. I quite like the posters though, her kind of eyes move.
Yes,
about.
Well, this is the second poster with her. Yeah, her eyes are cut out and moved to one side of the frame. But the first poster that had her face on top of her own face and then all around the edges, it said, "Is she or isn't she? Is she or isn't she?" And it felt like some like intern had just been told, like, you know, I think this film's like, is she crazy or not? Like, that's the point. Like, wow, well, maybe if we, like, put her face on top of her face. But this is great, actually. It sounds like we're laying into it, but this is definitely not a film to, I think, take too seriously. There's a lot in the film, and there is subtext to it, which we'll delve into, but its first point is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'd say so. It's, you can't really regard it as, like, a highbrow thriller or anything. It is very much in a B-movie territory. It's just kind of very lurid thrills.
Mm. Yeah, so to give some background on it, so we've got Steven Soderbergh, who obviously has directed lots of wonderful, wonderful films. Last year he came back into feature film territory with Logan Lucky, which as much in its form was quite traditional. He was trying to reinvent the idea of how a film might get distributed and marketed, that he was very much taking a stance on how this film was being sold to people and how it was being funded. And I think he's trying to retake control of how his films are being seen in that respect. But in this film, he's taken that a step further and he's taken complete control of how it's being made as well.
Yeah, he also had that TV show where it was like the interactive thing as well, where it started off as a game, but then got released as like a straightforward narrative as well. So it just seems to be at the same time while he is like kind of controlling how it, not just how it's filmed, but then also how it's viewed as well. And there's a lot of kind of experimentation that he's doing that he's kind of taken from his hobbying with just kind of re-editing other people's films, and he's kind of applying that to his own work as well.
Yeah, talking of that re-editing, if you haven't seen it, I do recommend his recut of Raiders of the Lost Ark, black and white, and with the soundtrack to The Social Network. So Unsane, he hasn't written this. It's come from James Greer and Jonathan Bernstein. These guys' previous credit is The Spy Next Door. Yep, that silence makes sense.
Not ringing a bell.
Yeah, no. And prior to that, it was Just My Luck. So somehow, Steven Soderbergh has just plucked this out of the ether, and it's a lot of fun. We've got Claire Foy, who people recognise us from The Crown and from Breathe last year. She's playing the lead, Sawyer Valentini, and she's kind of like the only relatively big name that's given a lot of time on screen, and she's our lead into it, and she, like, we're pretty much with her the whole time.
Yeah, it is kind of mainly her, and it's kind of marketed as she is the main lead in the film. I think it's great, really. It's really interesting to see her in this role. I wouldn't have expected it just from seeing her in The Crown and in Breathe. It's very kind of 1950s, a nice woman, and then this, she's quite venomous.
Well, I think like the film kind of asks, like, when you hear the pitch of the film, you're asked to sympathize with that character, but actually when you're watching it, she's not the most nice person, really. She, as you say, she's previously played the character a nice woman, and this is not her. And I think that the film takes an interesting line on that we don't really like her that much.
Yeah, I think I love that they made her a really prickly kind of character, because often in these kind of situations where it's always like kind of a very evil person and like this precious lamb or something. And it's, I think it's much more productive and interesting to have a character that's more complex than that. Because she's not thoroughly a terrible person, but she's really, we see her being very petty. She says she has like mean stuff about people locked away, seemingly, because he goes on these like tirades that we see throughout the film. And
she's really good at cutting people down in a sentence as well. She's got a few one-liners that are just brutal. You guys, you both saw the film in Berlin at the premiere, and that was with, I imagine, quite a big crowd, and it feels like maybe that's the right kind of environment for this film.
I'd say so. Everyone was getting really wrapped up in it.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I was expecting quite kind of a calm audience, but everyone was loving it, like shouting and kind of, because it's such like a fun film to watch with a big crowd.
It's kind of horror thriller. It kind of walks that line. I was expecting a lot of hesitance to kind of embrace it, like with the festival crowd, because the whole iPhone thing. You just expect this people to turn their nose up at it.
Yeah, well, maybe a bit like when the Netflix logo comes out for Cannes. They see the iPhone thing, they see it's a gimmick, and it's a big director just trying to do something on the cheap and hoodwink audiences into spending their money. But I don't think that's what this is at all. No. This is not M. Night Shyamalan doing The Visit and doing a found footage because no one will give him any money anymore. This is someone who's really actually committed to this belief. I remember Soderbergh doing a Reddit AMA at the time of Logan Lucky, and with the Reddit audience being the Reddit audience, there was like a lot of young guys going, I'm just starting off in film, what do you recommend I do? And other than just watch endless films, his point was, you've got a film studio in your pocket now, go and use it. And you see tons of directors doing this kind of thing, saying, everyone's got a phone these days, you can just go out and make films. But they're coming from a time when that didn't happen. So it's nice to see someone of a different generation actually doing the thing that they're telling young people to do.
Yeah, kind of doing what he preaches.
Yeah, exactly. And doing it well.
Yeah. I mean, because it is an iPhone, it's not the most visually appealing thing to look at all the way through. But I think the use of an iPhone is just implanted in the film in such a great way. Like, it's really, like, the phone will be like kind of placed on tables during conversations, and it's got this just really strange, like, it feels like you're watching like a Watch Dogs episode or something sometimes, because it'll be like as if someone has just put their phone on a table to like record a conversation. Well, it's just really,
he's
uncanny.
Not using it for the sake of using it, he's using it to figure out what the benefits can be from it. To me, that's in the cinematography, as you say, that you can suddenly put the camera in places that you couldn't previously put it, because it is something that fits in your pocket. You can fit it in gaps of the desk. You can do an interesting things with it. But I think he's chosen this script as well because I think he wanted to make the thing with the iPhone, and that maybe came first. And then he found the script to suit. because he's tying in the form with the theme.
Yeah, especially because it's all take a lot of it's taking place in just this one space with lots of confined corridors and rooms, and the I guess yeah, the size of the iPhone does allow for a lot of interesting angles to be taken just within such tiny spaces. There's a whole scene that takes place within a cell, and yet it just feels like such a large space. No one's like confined to the corner of the room. Like these characters are able to move really freely without like kind of any intrusion from crew, and yet you feel like you're in the room with them, which is just a I think something that would be really difficult to recreate with the setup that Soderbergh might normally have.
Yeah, it's quite functional. It reminded me of Dogma Cinema in kind of the 90s, yeah, where it's just the camera's there to tell the story. It's not supposed to be flashy or kind of, yeah, wow you with all these kind of amazing things. And like it does do that, but yeah, this is definitely more kind of there to fit into these tight spaces, just show what's going on, and stick with the characters quite a lot.
Yeah, throughout, Sawyer has this stalker who may or may not be in her head or not. Like that's never really made clear to us. That idea of privacy and surveillance, I think, ties into why he's making this film on a phone. In the press and in the advertising, it's very clear that we know it's been shot like that. Like everyone's going into this film saying it's the one shot on an iPhone. And I think he knows that as well. And so all the while I'm thinking, this is actually quite unnerving, because in a way it is like someone's filming her the whole time as well. And it adds like an extra layer to that. And particularly in the moments where she looks into camera during a conversation, where it almost feels like you're on the other end of a FaceTime call with her, because we know that that's how it's being filmed.
That did feel particularly uncanny. I was just thinking that there's a lot of people who have kind of seen the film already who are dunking on it for, well, myself included, for not looking particularly perfect. But like you said, with the Dogma stuff, no one particularly remembers Festen for how pretty it looked or something like that. It was, it's really great that the camera is being used in this kind of very intrusive, in a really kind of intrusive way. It just does, it, especially with the stalker plot, it just feels like the camera is in a space that it's not supposed to be most of the time.
Yeah.
Especially with its really strange placements and the general setting as well.
We will get more into the plotty elements at the back end of the podcast, but because I think this film is a bit more on the spoiler territory than the regular stuff we'll talk about, we'll let you know when we're going to dive into that stuff. But yeah, I think you're really right on there. There's other stuff about the form that I would like dip into that I'm not sure why it exists, but I'm just kind of happy to see him experimenting. That's something really strange is the aspect ratio of the film. So you shoot on an iPhone, your footage comes back at 16:9, and then this film is 1.56:1, and I don't know why. And I'm sure you guys don't know why or would have a reason for that, but like clearly some decision has been made
because he's messing with us.
Yeah, I really don't know. Like maybe it's because it's gonna make you more scared.
A more confined frame.
I don't know, because if you're gonna do that, do like 4:3 or 1:1 or something.
Yeah, but this is like way Academy ratio.
Yeah, but this is like maybe that is it, that it's a ratio you don't recognize and that's what makes it spookier. Maybe, yeah.
As soon as I saw the first frame, I got chills. I was like, why is it, where's the letterbox?
Yeah, this is the real horror. So let's get a bit more into the performances in the film. It's very much led by Claire Foy. I think she does a great job a lot of the time because of the where she is in a mental institution where people's conversations are not taken seriously. It means that she's having to do a lot of acting either against herself or against people that aren't actually replying to questions. Like there's not a Q&A back and forth in the dialogue. She will ask a question and someone will reply by telling her to do something. Because it's such an awkward way of dealing with other actors, she does a great job with.
Yeah, I think she handles a lot. I think the film goes through a lot of fairly big moments and tone changes as well, and she handles those really readily. Because one minute it'll be you'll kind of get the Soderbergh wit, like people will be trading barbs, and then it will turn into veer almost into horror territory with some of the stuff that's going on.
Well, I think a good point to talk about with exactly that is the opening 10 minutes of the film. We're establishing her at work her colleagues, her on her phone to her mum, her going to a bar, her going on a Tinder date, her being quite cold and direct with men, and then bringing her back to her apartment. This has kind of been 10 minutes and you've almost forgotten that this is a horror film. Like, she's quite witty. She, like, it's like you're looking in Erin Brockovich territory for Soderbergh. And then she's just looking at a guy in her apartment and screams and flips out and runs into a wall. And then you remember what film you're in and where this is going to go. But like that, she can flip like that and it doesn't seem comical. Like, she really manages to balance it so well.
Yeah. I don't want to call it like fragility or anything, but I think she does walk that line really, really well. But then at the same time, I think she's at her most enjoyable. It is kind of on a base level at her most enjoyable when she's just letting loose at people, when she's just kind of letting people have it.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the hospital. So as I said, she flips out with another guy. She's moved to this new city, wants to kind of calm down and settle down a bit after moving there to escape her stalker. She thinks, I need to get some help, so goes to this facility for what she thinks is a therapy session, and then accidentally signs herself in for 24 hours. And then we start meeting Juno Temple, who plays Violet, who's a patient in the institution. You've got Jay Farrow as Nate, who's kind of her friend, who's like, you're the guy on the inside, for want of a better word. He's the guy who's managed to sneak a phone in. And then most importantly is Joshua Leonard as David Strine, who's Sawyer's ex, whom she believes is stalking her, and we never are really given fully that confirmation or not. That's the dilemma at the centre of the film, I suppose. And he is a massive creep. So good at it.
So good. So kind of, makes your skin crawl, but like, in kind of enjoy watching him. But because I think there's a bit where she thinks she sees him and then sees him for longer in when she's in the hospital, and you're kind of questioning, like, is it him? We don't know. Quite enjoyable to watch somebody being so creepy and kind of love to hate him a little bit.
And I think we're looking at the B movie side of things, that they're not trying to make a new type of villain. It's very much you're giving him like hairs thinning, he's got a beard and he's got the big round glasses. It's very much playing up to that trope of who the creepy guy is.
I found it quite interesting, because if Foy is like the opposite of a typical victim, then he's basically exactly what we'd expect from her harasser. But I think a lot of my favourite parts with Leonard's character are when we see him just kind of being a bit pathetic, because I think it was a lot more compelling when he was someone that we could envision meeting, because I think he's just got these very average looks. Sorry, Joshua. He looks like someone you could just bump into a lot of the time. And, you know, and apart from the kind of big stalker glasses. But yeah, the moments where he is this like kind of nice guy and just a little bit limp among the most compelling for me. But then when he does switch on the this guy is a murderer vibe. I think it's really compelling in that sense too.
Yeah, well, that's the two performances there that they have to balance on a knife edge of that we need to take them seriously at points. We need to have fun at points as well. And they need to, like, we need to either feel their fear or need to feel their violence. And I think both characters do that.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
But let's, before we do delve into the more spoilery stuff, we want to talk about the kind of subtext reading of the film that I think has changed since Soderbergh would have decided to have made this film. Because with a bigger audience you guys had in Berlin, I only watched with a handful of people, what the feeling was afterwards and what people were talking about.
It was quite a mix. There were a lot of people I talked to who either caught Soderbergh's angle at the US's kind of dodgy paid healthcare system and how easily that can be exploited. But also there were some people who were a little bit iffy about the portrayal of mental health because it is at its core a story about believing the stories of women. But then at the same time, it also, I don't know, I think people were taking it as being a little harsh on Juno Temple's character. Mm. It didn't always have... It could be seen as not having a sympathetic light on all of the characters she surrounds herself by, but at the same time, that's kind of from the necessity of it being a thriller slash horror movie.
Yeah, I guess it was maybe like a little bit lazy in that regard, in the way that Juno Temple's character was handled. Mm. I think we've seen it before in Girl Interrupted.
There's a certain plot point with her, which is, I think, something we talked about on the show before as well, that is kind of made light of, that really shouldn't have been. And this is something that has been brought up with Berlin and a number of other films as well.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel necessary as well.
No, because it's done in a particular moment to sell Valentini's, maybe ruthlessness and pragmaticness, and then also this her stalker's like kind of patheticness and maybe violent tendencies. But at the same time, this is stuff we already knew, so it did feel like a step too far for me.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's dive into some of the reveals through the film. Do go and see Unsane. It's a lot of fun. It's a proper modernization of like the exploitation B movie, I suppose. Try and time it as a double bill, maybe. It's quite a short film. Go to the cinema twice, just like start with this and then go into something. I don't know, because no one's doing a double bill anymore. But do go and check it out and stick around now for a bit more dissection into some third act revelations. So, main thing, Matt Damon.
Ah, let's talk about that quality Matt Damon. I was really unnerved by seeing him in just presented in that context, because, you know, with the iPhone stuff, I feel like the frame rate's maybe like bumped up a bit or something, because there's something in there, and then that's making seeing a kind of bespectacled, dressed up Matt Damon just suddenly roll up one of the just pleasantly it was a pleasant surprise, but it was also really funny.
Yeah, and we mentioned before starting recording that as much as Claire Foy is great, she is not a mega star. And so this reality of it being on a phone and it feeling like FaceTime, that this could almost be someone that you know, because she's not instantly recognisable. Mm. And then you are taken out of the film when... three quarters of the way and it's just Matt Damon.
Yeah,
it's like megastar.
Hey, it's me, I've got your passports here. It's kind of turned from seeing like, oh god, this is someone we could know, and then suddenly it feels like you're watching like a celeb Instagram feed.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely the point in the film where you realize just everyone's having so much fun with it and just kind of take it as it is.
Yeah. And like, this is like one of Damon's lines is your phone is your enemy, which I think is
really great. There was a book as well. It's been a little while since I saw the film, but I remember he had this book with this really great title, and it's escaping me right now.
Yeah, it's like You Will Die or something, like really like stupid and on the nose. That was great. This is an opportunity, I think, to talk about Nate's role in the film, who is very much like for the most of it, a patient we think is maybe the most stable patient. He's managed to get himself a phone and he's helping out Sawyer. It plays on our misconception as well that we instantly kind of don't believe him the whole way through as well, just because he's in there.
Yeah.
As well.
It does kind of hold up a mirror to you and your own perceptions about people with issues of mental health and those kind of institutions. And I thought it was really interesting where just enough information would be withheld to make you kind of wonder about the legitimacy of what they were saying. Like, all right, I can't recall seeing Jay Farrow in another feature film, but I thought he was really solid at walking this line between just being really, really slightly suspect, but also really just charming and friendly and a really great... You can definitely feel why Sawyer would just anchor onto him, someone to kind of depend on in that context.
Yeah, and he, like, very later on in the film is revealed that he is actually a journalist and he's on the inside and he's working on a story about how the hospital is trying to convince people that they're suicidal so they can keep them in there and get money from the insurance. And this is total Soderberghy stuff. He absolutely loves a healthcare conspiracy.
Wait, Side Effects was one he did.
Yep, Side Effects. And then Contagion has Jude Law's character who's like exploiting pharmaceutical companies because he's like made up that there's a cure for the contagion disease. And then Side Effects has like stock market stuff to do with pharmaceuticals as well. This is clearly something that he's very passionate about, and he's making people look at a real world topic by giving it an exaggerated version so that people will actually start looking at how the healthcare system is exploited in that way.
So what you're saying is Unsane is about ethics in US healthcare.
Yes. Yeah. Unsane is a documentary. It's shot on a phone. How else could they do it? It's on her phone. She's filming herself. Guys, it's like The Visit.
Method for this one.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that stuff. And he's really good. You've already mentioned about withholding information, even in the Ocean's films as well.
Yep.
He's great at making you think you've got all the cards, even when it's a genre film like a heist film or a thriller where all of the time you know you don't, but he convinces you that you do know what's going on. And then he manages to pull that every time. And I love that about him. He's like a little magician, isn't it? Like, he's always got the prestige to bring out.
Something up his sleeve at all times.
It's a whole load of fun. And I think it does drag out its ending a bit. I think the same thing happened with Logan Lucky, that he does feel a tendency that he needs to tie up every single loose end. And I think the same happens with Unsane.
Yeah.
That there's just a few plot points that, like with Nate and the journalist, and then the head of the hospital needs to be taken down, and there's a lot of steps to get to the end point when we've spent so much time with Sawyer that really that's all I need to know about. I don't really need the rest of it.
It also it also loops back around to the beginning with her job as well, which I thought was in a fairly gratuitous hook as well with
the final scene.
Yeah, it's a lot. And then with that being a lot, and then there's that that freeze frame.
Okay, right. Yeah, let's get right into the final scene stuff. Listeners have reached this point, so they've seen the film. Like, we can mention what happens.
Okay, so she ends up talking to her, I think it's her co-worker from the beginning of the movie, and she very coldly fires her from her job over lunch and then kind of carries on eating lunch. But in the distance, she sees a man who very much looks like
David Strine,
and so she picks up the steak knife and goes for him, holds off at the last minute. Good job, Sawyer. And then it's kind of ends up in this her panicked run outside, and then just this freeze frame on her face, just kind of looking back at the camera. This garnered quite a few laughs at my screening. I'm wondering what about yours as well.
Yep. Laughs, but I think for the right reasons. Yeah. I love it, and it's kind of just acknowledging what it is and how we should be feeling about the film. He's an intelligent enough director that in 2018 you can't do a zooming freeze frame and have red text on someone's face and for everyone to be taking it seriously. He knows exactly what it is. He knows what he's doing.
Insane.
And I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I did kind of love it. It's not traditionally good. That sounds mean.
Well, there's the soundbite for the show, everyone.
Oh, please.
Put that on the poster.
Oh, I hope he's not listening. But yeah, it really reminded me of the last shot from Jungle Fever when it's this very tongue-in-cheek bit where Wesley Snipes' character like clutches his child to his chest and just looks up to the sky and yells no, and it just stops like what mid-sentence, and it just kind of felt like that.
Yeah, but I think like this knows what it is. Jungle Fever knows what it is. Like
debatable.
compared to something like Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, which is horrible.
it looks like The Scream.
Yeah, that's awful. But yeah, so in the end, we kind of end up where we about back at the start with the whole cycle begins again.
Yeah, they kind of tie up all of the loose ends except for hers.
Yeah.
She's kind of still in the same position, really. I mean, her trip to the hospital hasn't helped her at all.
Yeah, but I think like that's important that people come out of it thinking that someone with post-traumatic stress and who's had mental health troubles aren't going to go through a whole other trauma and be cured from that. That something that she has gone through is gonna leave some stuff behind. And I think it's important that no matter how silly that ending is, that we do come out of it thinking like that she is not gonna be just completely fine by going through a lot of violent acts.
I think it's really important to show that it's a cycle of abuse that she's been through, because it's not just one time that it's not just one horrible incident. It was a repeated series of things that happened to her. And I guess leaving it open-ended like that does reflect that, you know, it's a thing that people have to deal with forever. It's not just isolated. But.
Right. So that is Unsane. Do make sure you go and check it out. It's not the only thing you can watch this week. We do have on Curzon Home Cinema last week's big release, which was The Square. So you can still watch that in cinemas, which I would recommend for some banging scenes in a car with Justice playing on the soundtrack, just to hear that in some cinema speakers. So good.
It's popping off.
Yeah. But go and watch The Square. If you can't see it in the cinema, watch it on home cinema. And when you do watch it, come back and listen to our podcast on that with the director, Ruben Östlund, and the star and man at the moment, Kleiss Bang. But that is not the only on-demand service that you can watch as well, because Filmstruck is now here in the UK and have partnered up with Curzon. So Filmstruck, for those that don't know, is the on-demand destination for the Criterion Collection. It's previously just been in America, and now we've got it here in the UK. And Curzon are on the service and supporting it, and have got their own curated collection from the Curzon programming team, so the best of the best stuff on there. Do make sure you go and check that out, as there's loads of things. You've got Jules and Gin, The Consequences of Love, Funny Games, Andrew Arnold's Wuthering Heights, Amateur, Going Back to the Gold Rush. You've got the whole Three Colors trilogy, and Camberley, you've picked out a favorite from this collection as well.
Exotica, really wonderful film. Anton Egoyan, basically I think that anyone who makes jokes about Canadian politeness has not seen Exotica. Really kind of sad tale about a really lonely man played by Bruce Greenwood, called Francis, who frequents a strip club, but it's a strip club that seems to be full of really nice people. He's very isolated.
Like the one we go to.
Like, yeah. you know, just a nice hangout where you can talk to people.
Yeah.
It's very complex in how it portrays its characters, but it's very straight. It's weird because it's got a very straightforward narrative, and it's just mystifying, and it really gets you there in this film about what's essentially a strip club.
Just, yeah,
you know,
and great opportunity to find stuff you might not have seen. So, Steph, Wuthering Heights for you. This is filling in a gap.
Yeah, this is my last Andrew Arnold film that I need to watch. So, I'm definitely gonna go and watch that, 'cause I've been waiting for so long to try and see it. So.
Yeah. And for those excited for Let the Sunshine In, which is the new Claire Denis film out next month, Beau Travail, which is one of our better known films, is on the service as well. So go and watch that too. There's a lot of stuff on that Filmstruck, so do make sure you check it out. In the meantime, I just wanted to quickly read out some correspondence from last week's episode on The Square. We did ask for some emails. We got some great stuff back. I just want to highlight Maria Costa, who says, I love The Square. Osland is so philosophical in his ventures. He reminds us about the parts of us we'd rather not forget. And Kleist Bang, well, he is wonderful and delicious all at once.
I mean, I'm not going to disagree.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree with that. And very much true about reminding us of the parts we'd rather forget. I think Osland manages to do that without and making something as kind of bleak at times that The Square is, because it has those big laugh moments that are almost like sketches. It makes it a bit more accessible. As Jake pointed out on last week's show, you could kind of put this in a blockbuster audience and people are still going to find something in it to relate to. And the fact that he's managing to make that and make it kind of reflect the worst of ourselves at the same time is quite clever.
And through really surreal stuff too. Mm. Terry Notary.
And if you've got any thoughts on Unsane, then do let us know by emailing podcast@curzon.com. That'll be for reading out on next week's show. We do love getting these messages and we love reading them out as well. In the meantime, make sure you do subscribe if you've never listened before. Go back and listen to some of our old episodes. We've got some great guests as well, like Greta Gerwig and Clio Barnard and Sebastian Lelio and Kleist Bang and Ruben Östlund. That was all in the last month. Go and listen to all of those interviews. Subscribe, leave us a review on iTunes, and leave us a comment as well. And until next time, it's goodbye from Camberley.
Goodbye. Go watch Tomb Raider.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Completely forgot. I promised Camberley a bit of Tomb Raider chat. Rewind. Tomb Raider. Great. Yes?
Yes. Good parts about The Last Crusade, but with Alicia Vikander and the most impressive six-pack I've ever seen.
Yes. Like, it's set in London, but it actually feels like it. It's not Thor, The Dark World, which just has this compact tube map strangeness of geography. This is actually feeling like an actual place.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much to love. Plane sequence, great set pieces.
I haven't seen The Wave, which is the director's previous film, but the guy knows how to do a water stunt.
He loves water.
Yeah. This crash, this bit with an aeroplane on a waterfall, so cool. I really enjoyed Tomb Raider. I wasn't expecting to, and I really loved it. Like, there's a bit that's proper Crystal Maze as well.
Yeah, it knows colour puzzle.
Yeah, like a genuine Crystal Maze colour puzzle. What?
resulting in Vikander dramatically yelling, green! I love it!
Yeah, and then a strange bald man came out and they went to this like really big glass conservatory and then they had to catch these bits of silver. God, and then they won a trophy. It was so cool. Yeah, Tomb Raider. Go chat. There's so much on at the moment. You've got Unsane, Tomb Raider and The Square. Brilliant. We'll go round again. Bye from Steph.
Goodbye.
Bye from Camelot.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.